You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
It snowed here in Seattle. We didn't have a white Christmas, but we had a very white Boxing Day. Anyway, when it snows in Seattle, there's no going into the office. There's no going down to the recording studio. So I am coming to you today from the closet in my bedroom. When I'm not sitting on the floor of the closet in my bedroom with a mic trying to record my podcast, I've been watching movies with the boys to pass the time until the snow melts and we can mask up and leave the house again. We watched Power of the Dog the other night, acclaimed director Jane Campion's new movie about a tortured closet case in the American West a century ago. I really enjoyed it. Then we watched Single All the Way, a new movie about a tortured out-of-the-closet case in New England today. The tortured closet case in Power of the Dog, played by Benedict Cumberbatch, is tormented by his own self-loathing and the impossibility of living as an openly gay man a century ago. The tortured out-of-the-closet case in Single All the Way, Peter, he's tormented by his incredibly aggressively supportive family and the impossibility of him having any privacy. Now, Power of the Dog is an Oscar-bait prestige picture. Single All the Way is a by-the-book holiday rom-com. You're supposed to think about Power of the Dog and think about it deeply. Rom-coms, you're not supposed to think about them at all, much less deeply. Okay, here's a quick plot summary. Peter, played by Michael Urie, headed home for the holidays from sunny LA to snowy New England, excited to bring his new boyfriend home to meet the whole family. Because there is nothing his family wants more than for Peter to meet the right man and settle the fuck down. But Peter's new boyfriend turns out to have a wife at home. He's been leading a double life, so Peter has to dump him. And then he asks his roommate, Nick, played by out gay actor Philemon Chambers, to come home with him and pretend to be his boyfriend. They're besties. They've been living together for a long time. Everyone in Peter's family has already met Nick, and they all think Peter and Nick should be together. So why not, just for the holidays, give Peter's family what they want and pretend that they're boyfriends? Hijinks ensue when Peter's mom, who, plot twist, apparently doesn't think Peter and Nick should be together, fixes Peter up on a blind date with James, her hot new spin instructor, the only other gay man who lives in Peter's hometown. Now, it's obvious to everybody that Peter and Nick are perfect for each other. Everyone knows it except Peter and Nick. Even James, mom's hot spin instructor on the blind date with Peter, he sees it after a couple of dates because Peter won't shut up about Nick. Nick this, Nick that. James is pretty gracious about stepping aside and allowing Peter and Nick, by the end of the movie, to be together. But why weren't Peter and Nick, who've been living together for years, two gay men, roughly the same age, equally hot, why weren't they already together? Because they're friends. They were such good friends, such good gay friends. They didn't want to ruin their friendship by having gay sex. Traditional rom-coms have always presented a certain sanitized version of heterosexuality, particularly holiday-themed rom-coms. And why should a rom-com with gay leads be held to a different standard or be any better? But those sanitized versions of straight sexuality in straight rom-coms, they're at least recognizably straight. Idealized straight, but plausible straight. The sanitized version of homosexuality in the handful of gay holiday rom-coms we've been subjected to over the last couple of years, and in Single All the Way in particular, not recognizably gay, not plausible gay. In Gayland, in LA, where Peter and Nick live, where everyone who made this movie lives, sex is pretty much how gay friendships start. Sex doesn't ruin gay friendships. Sex makes gay friendships. Even if Peter and Nick hadn't slept together already, something they might want to do before they get married at the end of this movie, they should at least be aware that most of their gay male friends have had sex with other gay men who went on to become their friends. If I were going to tweak the script, if I were going to tweak the plot line so it's a little gayer or a lot gayer, here's what I would do. Guy goes home with his long-term roommate, Peter and Nick. They've hooked up a few times. Maybe they hooked up the night they met, but there was never the right amount of heat there. They didn't completely click sexually. Something was missing. But they really did like each other, which is why they moved in with each other, not as lovers, as roommates, who maybe sometimes messed around. And this is where a movie about gay relationships could lean into gay sexual practices. Let's just say that Peter and Nick aren't together because they're both bottoms. They don't see themselves together as a couple or being able to make it work as a couple because they're both bottoms. One person can't be all things to another person. And we're told when someone can't be all things to you, or when someone can't give you one very specific thing that you really need, you have to dump them. We've been told by a million rom-coms that you have to get everything from just one person, and if that one person can't be your everything and meet all your emotional and sexual needs, if there's a hole that person can't fill, you're supposed to break up, start over again. But there's another option, which is to keep that person and go find, maybe together, someone who can fill that hole for you. So, wouldn't it be gayer? Wouldn't it be more interesting? Maybe it would be a different movie and I should go make that movie and stop complaining about this movie. Be more interesting if Peter goes home, gets fixed up with mom's personal trainer, goes on that date, they hit it off. But since there's only one bar in this town, his roommate, Nick, walks in and Peter introduces Nick to James and they all hit it off and wind up having a threesome. And it's amazing and the sex is super hot. And the missing piece all along, it's right there in front of them. The missing piece was another person. So Peter and Nick can now see how they can be together. They move to town, open a plant shop or whatever, and they're a couple, but mom's spin instructor becomes their regular third, their very special guest star, who also becomes a part of the family, invited to mom's place at Christmas. But when it's just the three of them, James is there to plow those two boys. Sometimes they hang out, sometimes they go ice skating or whatever it is people do in small towns, but just as often, James sends them a text, sends Peter and Nick a text, letting them know he's horned up and on his way over. And Nick and Peter clean out and wait by the door on their knees and elbows, asses up. I'd love to see that movie. Because for me, that's part of what being queer is about. Not waiting by the door with your ass up, but just writing your own rules. Taking what works for you, what might be quote unquote straight, and queering it up, getting creative, setting your own terms and making your relationship work on your own terms. So, yeah, I didn't like Single All the Way as much as I liked Power of the Dog. But maybe the problem was me. Maybe I have unrealistic expectations of rom-coms, or maybe I was watching a rom-com. What I should have been watching was a porno. All right, coming up on today's show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum, a professor of obstetrics and gynecology, Dr. Daniel Grossman, joins me to discuss abortion medication. And before we get to the question and answers and the guests for this week's show, Happy New Year, everybody. This is our last show of 2021. We will see you in 2022. And a big thank you to everyone who gave the Magnum Savage Lovecast as a gift this year. We really appreciate your support. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get up to $200 off all mattress orders at helixsleep.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old cis gay male in London where I live with my 48-year-old male partner. We're in a very loving, monogamous relationship and have been for the past 4 years. I moved into his house about 2 years ago here in the city, but over the past year or so, I've developed feelings that I might be poly, or at least polycurious. It started when a friend of ours posted on Instagram about their poly relationship, where he was supporting his boyfriend just before he went on a date. And something just clicked inside of me. I saw it and I just thought, that's what I am, or at least, you know, that's what I want. It's hard to describe, but it felt like an answer to a question that I didn't even know to ask. Since then, I've spoken to a few friends about this, and I've actually found that some happen to be polyamorous, or at least in some form of open relationship. But I just haven't been able to bring this up with my partner yet from the fear that the mere suggestion of this might be the beginning of the end for a few reasons. When we first started dating, he said that he didn't want, quote, a modern open relationship that everyone seems to want right now. At the time, I didn't object to this, since I also thought that this would be the best for me too, especially since that I grew up in the middle of nowhere and you just don't know what you don't know. Since he's nearly 20 years more experienced than I am, I'm presuming that he's been in this situation before and knows what he wants enough to ask for it. We love each other very much and are able to support each other really, really well. I'd be lying if I didn't say that there was some level of codependency between us both ways. We both have horrifically stressful jobs and are able to take care of each other through those difficult times. The thing is that because I only think that I might be poly and I haven't actually, you know, practiced it in any way, I keep going back and forth in my mind of if it's worth bringing this up. Yeah, at the same time, the more that I suppress these thoughts, I also feel that it's hugely unfair to him. So I just feel stuck in this sort of limbo, really. I really value what we have, and I would just love to explore this with the both of us. But he's not great about talking about how he feels. So my question is, Dan, how should I approach this with him?
There's only one way you can approach this with your partner, with your boyfriend. And that's with the full understanding that revisiting this subject, which he may feel was closed along with the relationship at the beginning of the relationship, is highly likely to upset him. I think you need some clarity. You need to get clear yourself on what it is you want exactly. Like a lot of people these days, you seem to use open and poly interchangeably. And of course, they are different things. Someone who is comfortable with their much younger boyfriend or their much older boyfriend or their boyfriend who was born at the exact same time, having sex with other people might not be comfortable with their boyfriend going on dates with other people. Poly means concurrent, often committed romantic relationships, entanglements, relationships that come with expectations and obligations that require some space, the making of some space. And not just you, if you were dating someone else, making space for that person in your life, but your boyfriend making space in your shared life for you to have space for this other person in your life, making time for that. Is he willing to do that? Well, you know, a lot of people who wind up poly started out open. A lot of people who became open started out monogamous. He could get there, but it seems to me that you might want to keep the ask relatively small at first, that you're asking perhaps to revisit the conversation that you guys had about the relationship, that indeed, you've come to the conclusion, now that you're 28 years old, that maybe lifelong monogamy isn't for you, and you don't want to end the relationship or get out of the relationship, but obviously you want to renegotiate the terms of the relationship, at least be able to have the conversation. There's no way to have that conversation without potentially upsetting your boyfriend. But who knows? Maybe he feels differently now. Maybe he feels more secure in the relationship now than he did then. If indeed his request for monogamy came from a place of insecurity, which it doesn't always. It could just be that he prefers a monogamous relationship. But I got to say, you're not some rare endangered species. You're not some like hothouse orchid in that you want to fuck around with other people. Most people do want to fuck around with other people. Most people who are in monogamous relationships are still attracted to other people, not just sexually. Sometimes they get crushes on other people. So looking inward and discovering your poly isn't really to discover anything about yourself that isn't true about most people, including most people who have made and are honoring, as you have made and are honoring right now, a monogamous commitment. So let's just lower the stakes, lower the drama here. You don't have to come out as suddenly realizing you're poly. You just want to have a conversation with your boyfriend about these terms. And like most gay couples, you had an opt-in conversation about monogamy. Doesn't sound like it was a default setting. It was a decision that you two made together to be monogamous. You want to revisit that decision, see where he's at, and tell him, quite honestly, where you're at. And if you can't see yourself remaining in this relationship with him and being happy under the terms that you agreed to 4 years ago for the next however many decades you guys are together until your boyfriend dies or you die and one of you and you win the relationship contest, then you might have to end this relationship to be who you are, to have what you want, if what you want is concurrent, committed romantic and sexual relationships with more than one man.
Hi, Dan. I've just come out of an abusive relationship, which I recognize it to be now. He was controlling, jealous, used every insecurity of mine against me and was physically violent at times, especially the last event where he also threw my phone out of the window and I was bleeding. I cut contact with him. I reported him to the police and reported him socially on Instagram because I wanted him to face the truth of what was reality and not hide, because I still loved him and I wanted him to have a future where he was not the piece of shit that he's being. I got into contact with him again when, packing up his stuff, I found some things that he'd written just before all of this happened, where he acknowledged the pain that he was causing me and that he needed to stop but didn't know how, even though I had proposed several treatment ideas, not organizing them for him, but just suggested it. He was the first time I ever fell in love at the age of 27. I'd been in long, stable relationships and healthy relationships at that, but something had always been missing. And when I met him, I knew I was going to fall in love with him. I was skeptical of my gut instinct, but something inside of me told me I would. And there wasn't any love bombing phase or anything like that. It was just him. The problem is that now that we're back in contact via email, he's still very jealous. And he doesn't seem to be understanding what he's done, even though he should be starting therapy soon. And I don't know if I should cut contact again and risk being the terrible person that can become in his mind and losing the last shred of love that is there towards me, which sounds ridiculous, or I should just cut him off, which, talking to you now, feels like the right answer, even though I don't want to do it.
You wanted him to become a better person. He's not. He hasn't become a better person. Just over email, he's still exhibiting the kind of jealous, controlling behavior that he exhibited while you two were in relationship. The kind of jealous, controlling behavior that is often a red flag for emotional and physical abuse, as it was with this guy. He's not in therapy. He hasn't done anything to get better. All he's done is figure out a way to weasel back into your life. You shouldn't have contacted him in the first place. I'm not blaming you. And the thing about abusers is that they're often very charming. That there's often a lot there that's good, and it can make it hard to walk away from someone who's been abusive. If abusers were just repulsive, terrible, awful people with no redeeming qualities, no one would ever wind up in a relationship with someone who was abusive. So that you see good there, that there were some things about this relationship that you miss, is common. You need to grieve that. You need to grieve that with the help of a therapist. I hope you're in therapy yourself right now, because you need to find the strength to end this relationship once and for all, to block him and have nothing to do with him in the future. Even if he gets into therapy, even if he gets better, even if he gets himself to a place, perhaps motivated by your rejection of him by the end of this relationship, where he can be healthy, where he can have a functional relationship and not be abusive, and that is possible, people can get there, I still don't think he should have that relationship with you. What you're telling yourself is there might not be anybody else out there that you'll feel this way about, that it's just him. That is a lie. That is a lie that some part of your reptile brain or subconscious mind is telling you in order to rationalize getting back into this relationship, which you know you shouldn't do. There are other men out there. 3.5, 4 billion-ish men on the planet. You can meet someone else. Even if you never meet anybody else that you feel this strongly about, even if you're alone for the rest of your life, better to be alone than to be in an abusive relationship. So, send him the shit that you found that he needs to have, no return address, and then block him. Block his email, block his phone numbers. Have nothing to do with him. And then get out there, meet some more people, and then see. See if you don't meet somebody else that you can fall in love with. That could happen. But even if that doesn't happen, you can build a life for yourself that's rich and meaningful and rewarding, even if you're single all your life, or single for parts of your life, as most of us are in adulthood. But you can't take this guy back. You can't. And you know it. So I'm just reinforcing what the higher functioning part of your brain is telling you right now, which is to end this. He's no better than he was. He hasn't gotten help. You're already seeing signs in his emails that he's as jealous and controlling and manipulative and abusive as he was when you were together with him. So it's over. Stick the dismount. Block, block, block. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for sex, the best mattress for sleep, and the best mattress for self-care. I know because I do all those things on my Helix mattress. Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. With Helix, you're getting a mattress that you know will be perfect for the way you sleep. They have several different mattress models to choose from. They have soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattresses great for cooling you down if, like me, you sleep hot. Mattresses great for spinal alignment to prevent morning aches and pains. And even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-sized sleepers. Terry and I took the Helix quiz, and we were matched with the Midnight Luxe mattress because we wanted something with medium firmness, and we both tend to move around a lot at night when we sleep. We love it. Our Helix mattress that we got for us was so comfortable. We got a Helix mattress for the guest room too, and our Helix mattresses can handle everything we throw at them. So if you're looking for a mattress, you take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to a mattress store again. Just go to helixsleep.com/savage, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. Then it arrives at your door, shipped for free, and your life changes for the better. Helix Sleep has a 10-year warranty, and you get to try out your new mattress for 100 nights risk-free. We'll even pick it up if you don't love it, but you're going to love it. Helix even has financing options and flexible payment plans, so a great night's sleep is never far away. Helix is also offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Go to helixsleep.com/savage.
Good morning, Dan. I'm a 33-year-old gay man living in Tampa, and I'm currently in a long-distance relationship with a man that doesn't exactly seem to have a very good, I don't know, relationship or demonstrative, emotional compass. And recently I've discovered that he's kind of been leading a double life and being that way toward men that he hasn't even met on Instagram and WhatsApp, and, you know, just talking to these men in ways that I could only wish that he would talk to me. I have found myself a few times now kind of becoming like that jealous, steaming, raging, you know, bitchy partner. And we eventually just kind of broke it off because I didn't want to continue to be that person. You know, I wanted to be able to actually enjoy my life instead of obsessing with feeling like I wasn't enough for him. And he asked to get back into a relationship. I kind of obliged and decided that I was going to give him another chance because I was still in love with him. Later on, I kind of discovered that he's still kind of up to the same thing. He's just kind of gotten better at hiding it. You know, I don't want to sit here with the woe is me bullshit, but God, man, I really, really love this guy. And I just can't see myself being poly under duress. I know that this is where this, you know, our relationship is headed because I've heard him on several occasions talk about sex with other men. Sometimes he'll ask me to look for men to, you know, make sex videos with and send them to him. Most of the time, those guys aren't really my type. And I don't know what to do at this point. I don't know how to dump this motherfucker already. Like, I really love him, but I'm not sure that he's good for my mental moving on. I mean, I have like a humongous emotional bandwidth for people, and being that empath just kind of makes me put up with their bullshit until like I can't take it anymore. So I don't know. I mean, do I like take the journey into learning how to be poly so that he could get his needs met? or do I just call it quits and go after the men that just want me for me?
Okay. You love him. That's not enough in the absence of sexual compatibility. If you're going to have a romantic and sexual relationship with this guy, who you are sexually, what makes you comfortable, what makes you happy, what makes you feel secure, doesn't mesh well with who he is sexually, what he wants sexually. So yeah, he's still who he was the first time you broke up with him. He likes to get on the internet. The anonymity of the internet frees him. He talks to other men in ways that you say he wished he talked to you. And what I think you mean by that is you wish that all of his sexual energy was directed at you, that you were the exclusive focus of his sexual interests and fantasies. And that's just not the case. It's not who he is. So what are you going to do? Well, you're not going to make the self-identified empath mistake of telling yourself that you can't end this relationship if the only thing that's not working is sex, or that you failed if you can't make it work or make him work or fix him or cure him, that you aren't the empath that you've told yourself that you are. You don't have the emotional skills that you've led yourself to believe that you do. You can't fix what isn't broken. The way he expresses himself sexually, different than how you express yourself sexually, different from what you would like or be most comfortable with in your sexual partner. Doesn't mean he's broken. Doesn't mean you can fix him. Doesn't mean you're broken. Just means you're fundamentally and basically sexually incompatible. And it's not going to change. He can go to some effort to hide it from you if that's what he feels he has to do to keep you in his life. And you can suspend your disbelief and pretend, when he is successfully hiding it from you, that he isn't who you always knew him to be sexually. But in the end, yeah, there's going to be a crack up. He's going to ask you for sex videos, or you're going to find out he's created a new Instagram account where he's flirting with people in your area or people that you know. And it's just going to be a never-ending shit show, because you're trying to change something about him that's never going to change, and he's wanting you to be someone you're never going to be. So as much as you like him, as much as you love him, as sad as it might be that there's this conflict that makes it impossible for you two to remain in this relationship, that's just the fact. That's the fact. You're just going to have to end it. And ending it doesn't mean it was a failure. You can be better for the time you spent with him. You can walk away from this relationship, still friends, just not together. Maybe you'd be better friends. Maybe you could even be flirty friends who chit-chat with each other about sex once you let go of the expectations of what it means to be each other's primary romantic or exclusive romantic partners. Maybe there's a friendship you can salvage here, and maybe not. But you know what there isn't here? There isn't a love match. You guys are sexually incompatible. You're going to have to call it. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Oh My God Yes, a website devoted to sexual pleasure. OMG Yes scientists partnered with Indiana University and Yale University researchers and asked tens of thousands of people what they discover is most pleasurable for them. It's a treasure trove. This website is a treasure trove of techniques that you can use on your lover or yourself, or ask your lover to use on you. Here are some of the topics just to entice you: layering, hinting, signaling, orbiting, broadening. These are techniques you may not have thought of or may not even know about or know what that means, but going to OMG Yes, learning about these things will expand your boudoir repertoire, and it's all presented in straightforward and honest videos, animations, data visualizations for men, women, couples, or whatever you've got going on. OMG Yes makes the very best gift. See how much there is to explore. Learn what works for other people and learn what might work for you at omgyes.com. Savage Lovecast listeners get a special discount at omgyes.com/savage. That's omgyes.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. Question: how to really top somebody really dom somebody, not BDSM dom, but, you know, kind of light, I guess, stuff like restraints, holding down, being forceful, telling the person what they can and can't do while we're in the act of sex. I don't know. I just don't. I feel kind of like I'm acting while I'm doing it. And that makes me feel inauthentic. So it doesn't really feel sexy to me, because I think authenticity and vulnerability is quite sexy. And because I see that as not being authentic, it doesn't feel sexy to me. I'm not like a super duper bottom. I'm a mask looking lesbian, non-binary, just sort of coming out non-binary. But yeah, I'm on top a lot, but I don't really, I'm not forcefully on top or dominating somebody. And I just was wondering if you or any of your listeners have any tips about where I can start and how to not feel like I'm acting when I'm telling the person what I want them to or not to do. Yeah, I mean, we have safe word and stuff. So, like, I know the other day she kind of was like, oh, we didn't need to stop then. Or you didn't need to sort of ask me if I was okay. If I wasn't, I would have used a safe word. So I'm just too nice, I think. I don't even know. I'm always checking in. It's not sexy when you want to be kind of controlled. So help, please.
You don't need my help. You're already getting the best kind of help from the person you're dating. You're getting feedback. Continue to solicit that feedback. What you need to do, it might help if you're trying to establish a DS relationship, is there are times you declare a timeout from the DS dynamic, and that person, your sub, is empowered to say anything, to critique your performance, to tell you what they wished you'd done, and you will file that away and then not be destroyed by it. You're building a dynamic together. You're creating a little play together. That's why they call it play. And you need their input. You need their feedback to do that successfully, to feel confident that you're doing it successfully, that you're meeting their needs, while also, if you enjoy topping, getting your own jollies off, right? Getting your own rocks off. If you want to do a little reading, I would suggest the new topping book by Dossie Easton and Janet Hardy. It is a classic. It has helped a lot of people, particularly people who have partners with submissive fantasies, who never saw themselves as dominant, explore what it means to be dominant. And one last piece of advice from a really kick-ass sex educator who you also might want to look up, Maduri, she's been on the show a lot, is that often for dominant women or dominant people, dominant non-binary people, dominant gay men, what you need to ask yourself in the moment is, what do you want as the dom? What do you want from the sub? It's often what the sub desires in a scene, is to meet the top's needs. So what you want can be very simple. It doesn't have to be about reading the sub's mind and wanting to give the sub exactly what they want in that moment. If you want a foot massage, if you want your ass ate, if you want to see your sub kiss your boots, whatever it is that you want in that moment, ask for it. And then, of course, outside of scenes, declare timeouts from your DS dynamic if it's 24/7, and have honest conversations where your performance can be critiqued, where suggestions can be made, and you also get to offer your critiques and make asks and suggestions of your own, and then work on it. But honest to God, you're already getting the best kind of feedback, which is feedback from your sub. The trick, if you're doming someone, when your sub gives you feedback, is not to feel undermined as a dom. Feel armed. Your sub is giving you the information that you need to dominate them in a way that works for them and works for you too. Oh, and one last thing, you can be a polite top. You can be a polite dom. You can be a solicitous dom in a scene, continually getting your sub's consent. It can be, you know, get on Twitter. There are a lot of people posting DS scenes, DS play to Twitter. Find some tops whose work you admire on Twitter. And often what you'll find, if it's a good verbal top, is a lot of banter, a lot of you want this, don't you? And that can be a solicitation in the moment of ongoing consent, of permission to continue going in a certain direction that might be working for that sub at that moment. Yeah, nothing wrong with being a polite, courteous top. You can have a sense of humor. You can ask the sub questions You don't have to wait for a timeout to get feedback. You can get feedback in the moment. It doesn't have to undermine your DS dynamic.
Hi, Dan. This is one of your listeners. I'm calling because I am a trans guy. I've been single for a year, and I just had top surgery, and I'm like ready to get out there, but I haven't dated since transitioning, and I'm having a lot of trouble figuring out what apps are good for dating. Should I move to New York City if I want to date? I don't know. I live in Philly, and there are definitely queer people here, but I'm just not really sure. So if you know anything about best ways to go about dating as like a bisexual trans guy who maybe passes like 70% of the time, not 100, that would be great.
You don't have to move to New York City to date as an out trans person. Lots of out trans people dating in cities, big and small, all over the country. And I'm here to tell you that all the apps are terrible. Everyone seems to be in unanimous agreement that all the apps are terrible. Everybody feels that way because everybody's been badly treated by somebody on the apps or gotten grief or had a string of bad luck. And so, yeah, everyone thinks the apps are terrible until that moment when an app works for them. I would encourage you to think about that moment as you slog through messages from people that you're not interested in dating or people who say the wrong thing or even people who say shitty things and you block them. Just remember that somebody's going to pop up on one of those platforms and you should just get on as many of them as you want to who you're going to click with. And then you'll look back on that app and you'll probably feel a little bit differently about it. But if you get out there and say, hey, everybody, what do you think of OkCupid? Or what do you think of Grindr? Or what do you think of Too Many Fish? Or what do you think of Christian Mingle or Farmers Only? You'll hear from people who had bad experiences that they're terrible. And everyone feels every app is terrible until, of course, the app, one of them, gets them something that doesn't feel so terrible that they're happy to have in their lives after all. The best way to get out there and date is to be honest about who you are and where you're at. Because the person you want to attract right now, the person you want to bring into your life, is someone who is into you for who you are and where you're at. So just put it out there. Recently completed my transition out trans bi guy. Looking to dip my toe back into dating and hooking up. And then you'll hear from people who are open to you. And hopefully you'll hear from some people who are sensitive to where you're at right now, who would be honored to be the first person that you went on a date with. You might hear from some people who fetishize you. You don't have to go on a date with those people. You might hear from some people who are shitty, who give you grief. You don't have to give those people your time or attention. You don't have to engage with them. You just have to block them. And then, yeah, then you'll meet somebody. And don't go into it with a scarcity mindset. We had a trans man on the show recently who got on Grindr for the first time and was a little overwhelmed by all of the positive messages that he was getting from gay men who were open to hooking up with or dating a trans guy. And I called him back because I wanted to ask him if he got any grief because, you know, some people are assholes and gay men are people and some gay men are assholes. And he hadn't gotten any grief, which I thought was a really good sign. So take the risk. Put yourself out there. It is the only way that you'll meet someone or meet people that you want to be with and who want to be with you. But they can't want to be with you if they don't know who you are or where you're at. So tell them. Tell them exactly who you are and where you're at.
Hi, Dan. I am 30. I live in the Midwest. And I think I'm going to break up with my long-term partner. There have been some things over the past few years that have should have been red flags to me. Well, he's recently done some things that have been very concerning to me. And although he has not physically hit me, there are many conversations where I will be mocked, basically mocking my tone of voice, my words, even recently saying things like, well, you do you and let everyone else do you too. So I didn't really know how to take that, and it's recently been getting rough, and I think now that I'm in my 30s, I'm getting to the point where I know my worth now, and I really, really do love him, but he absolutely outright refuses to go to therapy. He will not go to therapy. And he's dealing with the same kind of childhood trauma that I am. So that's just hard. I know that. But I don't know what to do. So I don't know. I'm a little worried that if I were to do that and, you know, like move to a different room in our house that we're still renting, then at that point, like he might have to go and live with his mom or something. And he doesn't deserve that. But I don't know what to do. And I'm lost, but I feel like I do deserve to be treated better. And he's told me that he won't treat me any better.
Don't take that shit from him. Leave that. Leave him. Leave the shit that he is. He won't get his ass into therapy with you there. Maybe he'll get his ass into therapy once you break up with him, once he realizes that there are consequences, there are prices he's going to pay if he doesn't work on himself and become a better, less emotionally abusive person. But you aren't required to date this guy for the rest of his life to protect him from the consequences of his own assholery. You say that if you break up with him, he might have to move back in with his mommy. Okay. Then you say he doesn't deserve that. Well, you don't deserve to be treated like shit, and you shouldn't have to put up with that. And who cares where he goes? He can find a roommate situation. He can live under a bridge. He can go live with his mom. He's not your problem anymore. Once you break up with him, you aren't responsible for him, and you aren't responsible for the consequences that he may suffer as a result of his actions or inaction. You need to emotionally separate yourself from this guy and break up with this guy and stop worrying about how he's going to feel about being broken up with. Nobody likes to be dumped. Nobody likes to be broken up with. Nobody likes to have to make new plans about where they're going to live or who they're going to live with in the wake of a breakup. So you can't protect him from any of that shit. The person you have to protect, the person whose feelings you need to prioritize right now, at this moment, is you and yours. You got to protect yourself. You got to protect your feelings. Worry about yourself. If you tell yourself, if you let him convince you, or you let the culture that tells women that they're responsible for relationships and that if a relationship fails, you failed as a woman, if you let all of that shit convince you you can't get out of this relationship until he's in a better place, until he's healthier, until he's in therapy, until he doesn't have to move back in with his mommy if you break up with him, you can never break up with him then. You will have essentially either allowed him to take you hostage or taken yourself hostage. I'm telling a lot of people to break up on this week's show. Break the fuck up with this guy. That's all you got to do. The person you're responsible to at this moment is you. Let him take care of himself. You take care of you. And what you need right now is to be free of this asshole. All right, before we get to listener response calls, let's read some listener tweets. Sarah Korchesny tweets, "Hey at Fake Dan Savage, to your mild freak out that a prospective sex worker's mom knew about her plans, some moms are or were sex workers. My parents met at a strip club 42 years ago. My mom was dancing, my dad was smitten, and now I exist." That's a very good point, Sarah. I would add that some dads are also sex workers. And hey, I'm glad your parents told you the truth about how they met, which made it possible for you to make this very good point to me, Sarah. Not just possible for you to exist, but possible for you to tweet at me about my podcast. There's a whole chapter in my newest book, Savage Love from A to Z, about why people who met sleazy don't share the truth about how they met, particularly with their kids, and why they should. You might want to pick that up. Everybody might want to pick that up. Tyler Rose, RPG, tweets, "Hey, Savage Lovecast, an NBA gender person who likes women is," and I'm going to butcher this word as I try to pronounce it, "feminamoric." Feminamoric, or trixic, Tyler Rose says. Trixic. Thank you, Tyler Rose. I will add feminamoric to my spreadsheet of hyper-individualized sexual orientations and gender identities. There are a lot to keep track of. It's a little like collecting stamps. Thank you, Tyler Rose. I will add feminamoric to my spreadsheet of hyper-individualized sexual orientations and gender identities. And finally, Strawberry Times tweets, listening to the Savage Lovecast and audibly yelled, "Oh no," when the caller said they were 19 years old and engaged. I knew Dan would call it out. I fell in love at 17, but we dated for 14 years before we got married. Glad I waited, and we matured together. I'm glad you waited too, Strawberry Times. I am a big fan of long engagements, as I told that caller. Glad yours worked out, and I hope theirs works out too. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag #SavageLovecast. And thank you to everybody who tweeted about the show over the last week or posted to your Instagram stories about the show. We really appreciate the support. And now, listener response calls.
To the caller in the recent podcast calling for advice about the campsite rule regarding her young engaged lover, while I agree with Dan that sometimes you got to do what you got to do, et cetera, I think it would be a mistake to keep things going with this guy once he's married. Maybe it's just a coincidence that now he's much more ready to give you an emotional relationship, but the fact that you circle back around and he's engaged under duress and suddenly much more interested in you, I'm not saying his feelings aren't real, but I'd be worried that they're a reaction. You don't say how young he is. So, I mean, that's possible. That is him just reacting to the fact that he's stuck with somebody he doesn't want to be with. And he sees you as an emotional escape hatch. You know, don't take this the wrong way. Also, if his family is so involved in his life that they can dictate these sorts of terms and even find a woman willing to go along with it, I feel like the odds of keeping an affair going without getting caught are going to be very slim. And the fact that he's willing to go along with it as well suggests to me that he's going to be conflicted, which is likely to cause him, you know, depending on how young he is, to do something drastic and foolish and maybe blow up his life and cause a lot of drama. I think it would be easier to just sort of quietly, you know, just sort of quietly let him go before the wedding. You know, don't sleep with him, you know, the night before or anything like that. But just slowly distance yourself, maybe, you know, just pull back to a texting friendship, because I think that might be emotionally safer for him especially, but also for you.
Hey, Dan, this is to the young New Englander in episode 791 who is looking for her long-lost love after a three-way that didn't quite work out. Hi there, New Englander. Something you said in your call jumped out at me. You said you had been cradled by past partners and couples. In fact, you said it twice. What these people were doing was not cradling you. They were likely practicing what Dan calls the campsite rule. They were showing good stewardship of a young, intelligent woman who's exploring new sexual terrain. Being cradled is not a component we want to carry into adult relationships of any form. Speaking from experience, the third person or unicorn can and should also practice good stewardship of the other two. By stealing the show, as you admitted, what you did was build a wall with that guy instead of a bridge. And good stewardship is all about building bridges. So the next time you're in a three-way and you feel a spiritual, transcendental, revolutionary connection, to use some of the words you used, with only one of them, practice good stewardship. Then you might score the digits of your long-lost love.
This is in response to episode 791, the caller whose partner couldn't come up with a term to describe their gender and sexuality. I noticed the caller said that their partner couldn't use the word queer because they present as a white cis male. But just because somebody has to live in the closet doesn't mean they aren't queer. I don't understand why this person can't use that catch-all term. It seems like somebody may have been gatekeeping that term and gave the caller some pretty nasty information. I would just let their partner use the word queer. It seems to pretty much sum everything up. And then if they want to get into the specifics of it with someone, they can.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's show or a comment about something I said on this week's show? The best way to get us your questions and your comments is to use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also call us at 206-302-2064. The opening festival of Hump 2022 is playing in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and Olympia throughout January, February, and March with a whole new lineup of new smutty films that we just put together. And I gotta say, if you're sitting on the Hump jury this year, it may be our best Hump ever. Tickets are on sale now, and as a special gift, every purchase comes with a free one-month Magnum subscription to the Savage Lovecast. Go to humpfilmfest.com to grab your tickets and claim your Magnum sub today. And for Magnum subscribers, we're doing something a little different with Sack Lunch in January. On Thursday, January 6th, instead of hosting a lunchtime online hangout, I will be hosting Happy Sack, a happy hour Zoom, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And to mix it up, we'll be playing a few rounds of raunchy games as one Magnum-sized happy family. Be on the lookout for more details. Come into your email inboxes, Magnum subs, soon. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Dr. Daniel Grossman on Twitter at Dr. D. Grossman. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.